Welcome to episode 266 of Higher Human Performance, the podcast. You can find the show notes over at higherhumanperformance.com. Just plug in the number 266. Today, I want to talk with you about time to amputate. Your organization won't win with a loser attached. If you go to the show notes, you will find pictured a surgical kit from the Civil War era. It's gruesome stuff. The pictures aren't gruesome, but I don't know. Just the thought of these implements being used for surgery in this modern age that we live in is pretty scary. Implements included that would be used for amputation. Soldiers with horrible wounds would often lose limbs in order to save their life. Sometimes we have to cut things off that would otherwise kill us as well. My consulting and coaching has always involved helping organizations, mostly businesses, morph and adapt. And I started seeing a trend about 8 years ago, an increasing need, but also an increasing resistance to the solution. Amputation of a poor performing segment of our business. It's difficult. Eliminating poor performing people from our organization. That's hard. Identifying and eliminating what isn't working isn't nearly as easy as you might think. But it's the necessary elimination of products and services, people, and processes. And you can't neglect the art of cutting. Well, not if you want to be a high-performing organization. I regularly encounter resistance when I talk with a business or an organization about the prospect of getting rid of or jettisoning a portion of their revenue stream so that they can save or grow other areas of their business. You know, we fall in love with our businesses. We fall in love with segments of our business. We fall in love with segments of our organization. We become attached. We become attached to our business model. We become attached to our hierarchy. I mean, sometimes we even have pet products or services. Now, business people can be notoriously loyal to whatever it was that launched their career. We've all seen this. If you spend any time in the business sector, you've seen this. The CEO who came up through the sales ranks or perhaps the accounting ranks or maybe the engineering ranks, they are most certainly going to have a hard time giving any serious consideration to, well, to outsourcing sales or to making reductions in research and development, if they were perhaps in engineering. You know, whatever, wherever they came from, that tends to be, they have an affinity for that thing. That's human nature. And even if it's more cost effective, even if it's more efficient to do things differently, that CEO is likely going to be too attached to having that thing in-house, or even if it's not a matter of having it in-house versus outsourcing, they're going to be too vested in that thing to really view it much differently than how it's ever been before, because he's got a viewpoint, and that viewpoint's going to be really hard to alter. Sometimes it's impossible to alter it because the CEO's just got too much history with whatever that space is. How we generate income often matters more than we care to admit, and it may not even be rational. It may not seem rational, and it may not even be rational, but to us, it's our business, and it's perfectly sensible. Maybe it made us wealthy. Maybe it made our enterprise successful. And our victories in the market, they were created because what we did and how we did it, it worked. And with empirical evidence staring us in the face, I have seen business owners that still refuse to see a category or a process or a person as a major source of sickness for their business. I mean, after all, it's our leg. It's our arm. It's our hand. You know, you try cutting off your own arm and leg. See how attached you are to your body parts. And that's the way many business owners are when I begin to speak with them about these kinds of things. Apply the same idea to people and their performance. Organizations of all kinds can get mired down, unable to accurately see what and who is working and what or who isn't working. on trial for its life. Back in the fall of 1999, I was running a company, and I crafted what I called a quantum leap. Now, we were about to embark on a new decade, a new millennia, and lots of people, if you're old enough, you remember this, lots of people, they were expecting a technology crash prompted by a year that began with 20 instead of 19. We were told, well, debit cards, they're probably not going to work. Credit cards, those are probably going to go kaput. Bank accounts going to freeze. I mean, gas pumps aren't even going to work. The world was going to stop turning, all because the computers on the planet had all been programmed for a year beginning with 19, not 20. Now, I wasn't terribly concerned at the time, and it wasn't because I was so smart in the ways of computer programming. I wasn't. It was mainly because I was preoccupied. I was occupied with other ideas. Taking business to a completely new level by using a pivotal moment in history, the year 2000, to rally the troops to achieve some things never before thought possible. Because we were, as far as the calendar was concerned, we were going into uncharted territory. And I saw this as a great metaphor. Let's take our company. Let's take our organization to uncharted waters. And it was during those fall planning sessions of 1999 that I found myself repeating a phrase inside the company and even outside some, on trial for its life. Now, I had risen in the ranks of leadership early in my career, back in my 20s, by doing just that. One overarching ambition seemed to trump everything else in my career. How can we do better? I mean, that was the question. That was the quest. How can we do better? The question wasn't, can we do better? The assumption was made, by me at least, always, we can do better. So now it's up to us to figure out how. And that's at the heart of putting things and people on trial for their life. No, I've never put people on trial for their literal life, but I have put their performance on trial for their occupational life inside the organization. Initially, some people, they think, well, that's harsh. You know who those people are, don't you? Yeah, mostly they're the poor performers. Or the people who don't want the pressure of high performance. I never much cared what those people thought. I never much cared what those people wanted. I didn't pander to those people at all. Because pandering to poor or average performance is just not good for business. It's not good for high achievement. It's not good if you want to operate a spectacular organization. And these decisions, by the way, these should not be handled flippantly. These should not be handled casually. I mean, if a surgeon wanted to remove an arm or a leg, I would most certainly give that surgeon a very vigorous, emotional argument. I'd balk. I'd fight him to exhaustion until he fully convinced me, you don't have any other choice. It's going to be this limb or your life. I've spent dozens of hours examining critical data on a single product or service or position or person before concluding, okay, we need to consider getting rid of this. We need to consider cutting this. Then I've spent dozens of more hours making a final call and figuring out, how are we going to do this? What's our best course of action here? I mean, it requires more than just a casual glance. You need to take a deep, hard look at anything or anybody who is on trial. Now, here's the elephant in the room. I'm going to suggest that you put everything on trial for its life. Yeah, everything. Everything. And this is obviously where the resistance comes in, and you can understand why. It's not a terribly comfortable thing. I think also the leader needs to put himself or herself on trial. I think you need to carefully examine the things that you do. I know that you think that you're wonderful and spectacular, and perhaps you are, and that everything that you touch turns to gold and everything works out just spectacularly well, and that the minions are all just waiting with great anxiety at your latest idea to embrace it and to run through a wall for it, but it's just not true. It's not true. Many of the things that you put forth as an edict and you think they work, they are failing colossally. You just don't know. In far too many cases, even an open and transparent leader can find themselves being told the things that they most want to hear. We're all prone to this. You don't have to be an autocrat for that to be the case. You simply just have to be a leader because people, human nature being what it is, people are going to want to please you. They're not going to want to disappoint you. They're going to want to tell you those things that they know you want to hear. And a lot of brain power, by the way, is going to be spent trying to figure out what you do want to hear and what you do want to see. And so having an objective way to view these things and having open, transparent conversations, it can be really difficult, especially if you've not been in the habit of doing that. And if you've not, then I would encourage you, start that. Start that today. You know, just check all the credentials and the cell phones at the door and just let people speak their mind in as safe an environment as you can possibly foster. We have these key performance indicators, these KPIs, and we have many other, depending on the space that you're in, the industry that you're in, the organization that you're in, you have these key metrics that are important to you, these measurables. I'm also going to encourage you to put the measurables on trial for their life, because we can have a dashboard of so many different numbers and so much data that we are overwhelmed with it, and we really don't know what we're looking at. If you look at a car, and we drive our cars all the time, and we've got all kinds of things that we really pay no attention to. Your car may have a voltage meter on the dash that tells what the voltage is in your car. Well, you know you got a 12-volt battery, and so if you're anywhere close to 12 volts, you're okay. But sometimes we don't have a gauge. We have an idiot light. And if that light's not illuminated, that's out of sight, out of mind. We don't care. I mean, it's not affecting the performance of our vehicle. So to have that on our dash as a meter, as a gauge, is not really so important. But remove the fuel gauge, or ignore the fuel gauge, okay, that's going to go down as we continue to drive, and we could run ourselves out of fuel. And now we're stranded. Not a good thing. Pay attention to what you pay attention to. And I would suggest that you put on trial for its life those key performance indicators, those KPIs, or whatever it is in your space, in your organization, those measurables that you're paying attention to. Just because you've been paying attention to them in the past does not mean that they're important to you today. Now, they may be. I'm not saying you just throw the whole thing out. But examine those things. Debate those things. Gather your staff around and take a look. I remember many years ago, commissioned to take over a company, take over leadership of a company. And as I came into the company, I just realized that they were just swimming in forms, all kinds of forms. Lots and lots of forms. I'd go around and I'd ask people, okay, what's this form for? Well, we use that for this. Okay, well, what's this one for? Well, we use that for this and that and the other. And I realized that by the time I got to about 9 or 10 of these forms, there was some overlap. There was some duplication. And then I got to a number of forms and nobody really knew. They completed those forms, but nobody knew what anybody did with those forms. And they gave them to this person, that person gave them to somebody else. And I ended up finding boxes and boxes of these forms that nobody dealt with. And I couldn't find anybody that had been there so long that they could even remember. There were plenty of people that had been there a long time, but nobody could remember even back when those forms got started. The supposition was at some point they served a purpose, but they had long outlived that purpose. I got to 27 forms and I quit counting. I quit gathering them. And I distilled them all into just a couple of different forms. I mean, we eliminated virtually 25 forms. Got it down to, maybe 24. Got it down to 2 or 3. And that was, it was no brilliance on my part. It was simply somebody who came in with a fresh look of a fresh pair of eyes and a fresh view and questions. What are we doing with this? What purpose does this serve? I find that over time, organizations stop asking questions. We start assuming. And those assumptions can get us in trouble. And those assumptions can cause us to grow lax. And those assumptions can cause us to not have the organization that's quite as efficient as it used to be. Our organizations will not win with losers attached. And those losers can take on the form of unwanted or unnecessary forms, unnecessary processes, unnecessary positions, people that are no longer doing the work that maybe they once did, people that may have never done the work, but are still showing up every day, dragging the place down. I don't blame any leader for their reaction to the necessary amputation of the things that are killing their organization. I just want to help you through the decision with the best possible solution so you can put yourself in the best position for success. I get that amputation is difficult, and I think the process should be given its due diligence. I want to contribute to help more leaders succeed. Too many organizations are suffering. America doesn't, we don't need to lose any more small businesses, and we don't need to foster any more inefficient, poorly run organizations. We don't need any more tyrants in the executive suite. We don't need any more blind leaders who don't want to hear the truth. We don't need any more people getting out of bed every day wondering where they fit or why they're going to work. We don't need people who are not engaged enough because they don't understand the story of their professional life. No, we need growth, and we need engagement, and we need health, and we need prosperity. We need tenacity. We need remedies. We need solutions. We need profits. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the benefit of a lower noise floor, because this will tie in to putting everything on trial for its life. Part of the problem that I have discovered over the course of the last 15 years or so is there is so much noise, like that dashboard. We have so many measurements. We have so much data. Computing power has enabled us to measure virtually everything, anything. Figure it out, and you can measure it. And just because you can measure it does not mean that it's a good thing to measure. Now, I know that that sounds very contrary, but and it is, but it's true. Again, it's like the voltage meter on the dash of a car. You know, unless it's below voltage, or unless there's some spike, I don't really need to know. The idiot light serves me just fine, thank you very much. But I don't want an idiot light for my fuel gauge. I kind of want to know where I'm at. I kind of want to be able to plan, okay, I can probably go another 100 miles before I need to fill up. And so just because we can measure it does not mean that we should, and does not mean that we should give a ton of time to not only measuring it, but scrutinizing it. I mean, lots of people scrutinize things that really have no bearing at all, but they're chasing some number. What does that number represent? Put the measurements on trial for their life. A lower noise floor is a huge element of focus. We hear a lot and we read a lot about focus today. Success is bound up in focus. Focus. When there's a lack of focus, there's sure to be a lack of success, yada, yada, yada. I want you to remember something. Focus is more about elimination of unimportant things than us merely trying to squint our eyes and concentrate more on what is important. If your dashboard were filled with 24 different gauges and they were all the same size, and there's a reason why they're not, by the way, there's a reason why that speedometer is a bigger thing than anything else on your dash. Yeah, because you need to watch your speed. But in this world of data overload, we end up with a dashboard, And we all know what dashboards are. We know what dashboards are in our car, and we use these dashboards. Every organization has some kind of a dashboard. They may not call it that, but many do. And it's these measurements. It's these scorecards. It's this way that we're going to keep track of things. And different organizations track all kinds of things. And the more things that you track, the easier it is to be distracted. It's virtually impossible to pay attention to all of these things. I'm rather fond of the notion, because I believe it's true, and I've kind of hung my hat on it for at least the last 25 years or so. If everything is important, then nothing is important. So if I go into an organization and the CEO, the leader, is a person who constantly preaches to the organization that everything is important, they're a detail freak, and they're backseat driving every decision made all across the organization, if they have any awareness of it at all. And the organization spends an inordinate amount of time either trying to keep them informed or trying to keep them in the dark, whichever the case may be, to stay out of trouble. And that person can tell me, I've been told by leaders before, details. It's all details. We sweat the details. And the notion is, it's all important. There's nothing that is not important. And I've constantly challenged leaders, and I still do, if everything is important, then there are no priorities. If everything is important, then that means necessarily that nothing is important. This is the burden of that high noise floor. I'm paying attention to this KPI and that KPI and this measurement and that measurement, and we're measuring dozens of different things, going in dozens of different directions. And we've really no idea where we're at or where we're headed. But we're watching the gauges. We're watching lots of gauges. We're issuing scorecards on quarterly or biannual basis, sometimes annual basis. And, you know, we're tracking this stuff. We're tracking this stuff. What is the track telling you? What are these scores telling you? We turn on a television set. Do you get frustrated like I do? We're in the throes of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And hockey's not bad about it, but sometimes you can tell that the graphics person, you know, they're behind, and you turn it on and the clock and the score is not up on the screen. Or it's really bad on radio. You can be getting in the car and you can turn a radio on, and whether it's football or baseball or anything else, you're just, come on, give me the score, give me the score, give me the score. You know, who's winning? We want to know, what is it we're wanting to know? We're wanting to know the most important thing. What is that? Who's winning? What is the score? It's really easy. Now, we can care about box scores and all that, and we can wait for next day's paper or for the internet to put those box scores up. They give all the individual stats, and in hockey, we may want to look at, okay, well, who scored the goals? But that's all much less important than who's winning the game, who's losing the game, how much time is left in the game. These are the important things. And when we focus on those things, then guess what happens? All those other things fade into the background. It lowers the noise floor. Why? Because we're focused on the one or two things that really, really count. And we may be interested in those other things later, but right now, it's who's ahead, how much time's left. So think about those things as you operate your organization. Focus. Eliminate these unimportant things, including insignificant or unimportant KPIs and other measurements and dashboard items and scorecards. If they aren't serving you, why do you have them? Do you have them just to have them? Do you have them just because you feel like the organization needs to be paying attention to these things, and you feel like, well, if my troops aren't paying attention to these little things, then they won't pay attention to the big things? No, I just have not found that true. I've not found it true any more than I have found it true that I can be very interested in the individual box scores on a particular player, and that will propel me to be more interested in the score and in how much time is left. No, it doesn't work that way. It distracts me. Give me the elephant in the room. Give me what's really important. Give me that up front. Beat me over the head with that. Constantly be telling me what the score is. And we don't do that. We too often don't do that in our organizations. I don't understand it. I've never understood it. We do not take the time to put things on trial for their life. And that includes all these measurements. That includes our processes and our systems. It includes how we do things. I get really hung up sometimes on meetings. We are in a over-meeting culture, big time. And I love meetings when there's a purpose for the meeting. When there is no purpose for the meeting, we're just having a meeting to have a meeting, I don't get it. I don't get it because there's so much more that people could be doing. I've yet to go into an organization, at least in the last 15 years or so. I have not gone into an organization where I can sit across from anybody in leadership, and even non-leaders, but especially leaders, that feel that they've got a lighter workload than ever before. No. Everyone acknowledges that they are doing the work of at least two people, sometimes three or more. And it is the nature of the beast. And I don't care if you're working nonprofit. I don't care if you're in city government. I don't care if you're in free enterprise. Every leader is feeling that pressure. Having said that, you would think that people would have figured out a way to, we need to get more done. But so many people are steeped in all kinds of these dashboard issues. And in some cases, they are so bent on collaboration, nothing can get done. Nothing can get done. Now, I work with three types of clients. I work with business leaders and corporations and city government leaders. That's all kind of lumped into one category. In fact, I'm working on a new project, by the way, citygovernmentleadership.com. There's nothing there, but I'm working on it. The second group is small business owners. And that work typically focuses on that whole trifecta of business building, getting new customers, serving existing customers better, and not going crazy in the process. And then the third group, I would describe them as solopreneurs and service professionals. It can be creatives like photographers. It can be people like financial planners, attorneys, and people of that ilk. Those are the three groups of people that I serve. And all three groups will tell you that they're overworked. They nearly all will tell you that they are involved to one degree or another in inane meetings, countless meetings. They will all acknowledge that figuring out what is most important, figuring out what to pay attention to in any given moment, can be more challenging than one might think. And they will all readily admit that there is a distraction problem. And nearly all of them will admit that there are times that they would prefer to be working on something other than the thing that they're working on, because the thing they're working on is a fire. The thing they're working on is some crisis. But it's not really where they would prefer to spend their time. I think a remedy for this, it's not a panacea, but I think it is a remedy, is for us to put everything on trial for its life. Put our processes, our systems, our forms, our meetings, our products, our services, our people, our roles, our positions, our titles, all of it. Put everything on trial for its life, because it's time to amputate. Because your organization will not win with any losers attached. The losers drag us down. The losers take our resources. The losers rob us of the opportunity to soar higher. I just think it's time to get rid of those things. Because frankly, I don't care what space you're in. It's a tough enough row to hoe without having those things drag you down. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is hirehumanperformance.com. You can click on that About tab or Who I Work With or Hire Me and find out all about me and what I do. The podcast is brought to you by my company, Bula Network, LLC. Bula, by the way, is a Fiji term. It means life. In particular, it means life is good. I fell in love with the term about 35 years ago, and so I named my company after that, Bula, Bula, a Fiji term. It's analogous to Aloha in Hawaiian. It means both hello and goodbye. but life. Life is good. Network only in the sense of it's a network of variety of things that I have offered through the years. I am a boutique executive coaching and consulting firm. Increasingly doing more and more what I would call leadership executive coaching. And that's been kind of a cool thing. I'm doing less and less roll your sleeves up consulting work, which is kind of how things got started. Just getting in and getting my hands dirty. And now I'm finding myself sitting across from people that are somewhat younger than me, which is kind of a good thing, and able to pass some things on, which is great and wonderful. If I can help you, I'd love the opportunity. All kinds of ways that you can reach out to me and connect with me, social media or the contact page over at the website, higherhumanperformance.com. And I'd appreciate it if you'd subscribe to the podcast too. Thanks for listening, and I hope you do well. And again, put it all on trial for its life, and let me know how that works out. Till next time, I'll see you.